The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
And since community is a very important part of Buddhist practice in general, it's a worthy topic in its own right. A few weeks ago, I gave a talk on friendship, spiritual friendships, here on Sunday morning. And it was a very important talk because the idea of spiritual friendships is a very important aspect of Buddhist practice, supports Buddhist practice. And if you didn't hear it, you weren't here, you might want to listen to it because it was so important, I think, the idea of practicing in the context of having friends. But also then a kind of, an extension of that is the idea of practicing within a community and how important that is. As so many of you know, one of the three treasures or one of the three refuges in Buddhism is community or Sangha. So there's three refuges are Buddha, Dharma, and the Sangha. And so Sangha here can have many meanings, but for today I'd like just to call it community of practitioners, community of people that we're connected to. And one of the very dramatic statements about the value of community or Sangha in the modern Buddhist world was made by Thich Nhat Hanh, who many years ago said that the next Buddha, and there's a kind of mythology in Buddhism that there will be a Buddha in the future, Maitreya Buddha, there's, you know, in some distant eon in the future, this new Buddha will be born. He said that the next Buddha will be the Sangha. Next Buddha will be the community. That's a quite powerful statement to be made. It's also an unusual statement, since the Buddha is usually seen as a person, as an individual. And then to say that the next Buddha will be the community is to say something provocative, I think. And perhaps, I can't speak for Thich Nhat Hanh, but part of the importance of it is that in our modern society, modern world, community perhaps has a much greater importance than it's ever had before. Not least because we're such an interdependent society, world now. And we're much more interdependent as a community than many people have been in the past. In the time of the Buddha, there certainly was interdependence among the society and community there. And the Buddhist monastic community was set up to be in dependence on the lay community. Whereas some of the lay people of the time, some of them could live quite independent of a lot of other people. There were, I can imagine there were farmers and hunters who could live for probably months without having to be in commerce and relationship to other people. Maybe still to this degree, some places in the world, but I remember when I was young visiting farms where the people were quite self-sufficient and had been for hundreds of years. I remember one farm I visited in Norway, deep in the countryside of Norway. It had everything it needed to be self-sufficient. The one thing it didn't have was salt. And so that's what they traded for. So very few people are subsistence farmers anymore, hunters, in the way they could have been a long time ago, or small villages. We're so interdependent with this wide range of people who our well-being, it's really dependent on so many other people. People living in urban societies like here, it's really clear that there's a huge, huge network of people who make it possible for us to live our lives. The people who, Caltrans, people who fix their roads and telephone lines and electricity and haul in the food from other places and, you know, government officials, just a whole bunch of things needed. So the point being that our interdependence as a community has, I think, only grown over time. And so it spreads out into the whole globe, where we feel our connection, we can be aware of our very, very deep connection we have to people far away. Probably it would be very interesting for us to read out, look at the label of the clothes we're wearing and to read out what countries our clothes come from. And, we suddenly start feeling, through our clothes, we're connected to people in Indonesia and Philippines and China and all over. So the next Buddha will be the Sangha, points, I think, to the tremendous importance that community has in the modern world. But what does it mean to be a community? What does it mean for IMC to be a community, for a Buddhist community to be a community? And what I'd like to say is that we have many different communities. There are each person who comes participates in a slightly different community. I have a view of what this community is. That's my view. Other people have other views of what this community is. It's not a fixed thing. You know, now we define, we know what it is. But it's something that's partly co-created. It's something that we, our values and help us to shape. It's also something that in different phases of a person's life, different community has different values. So for me to say this is what community is and community is important could seem a little bit oppressive to people who are not at that phase of their life. Individual person's involvement with the Buddhist community will shift and change over the course of their career or whatever as a practitioner. Sometimes it's quite close and connected, sometimes, you know, maybe much more peripheral. Suzuki Roshi, the founder of the San Francisco Zen Center, once defined Buddhism in three words. You ready for the three-word definition? He defined it as, or the core teaching of Buddhism in three words. Not always so. Isn't that great? Not always so. So you might think about that. Why is that so important? Why would that be a core, you know, central teaching of Buddhism? Buddhism encapsulated in not always so. And so the idea of community being a particular way, no, it's not always so. It shifts and changes. One of my first important Zen teachers, not Suzuki Roshi, but another person, was involved with developing San Francisco Zen Center quite a bit. He grew it and developed it, so San Francisco Zen Center became one of the biggest Buddhist communities of its time in America, and kind of pioneering, because there was very few or very little Buddhist community institutions in America when Zen Center started. And so Zen Center developed three different practice places. It developed a whole range of businesses, publishing companies, restaurants, bakeries, and an extensive community of supporters. And so the abbot, who was really instrumental in making all this happen, said once that something like, it's very important to create a Buddhist culture, a Buddhist kind of society, because as there's a culture, a society of Buddhist practitioners where the Buddhist values are held, that will allow the possibility at some point in the future for a, and again, I think he used the word Buddha here also, for a Buddha to be born, that some exceptional practitioner will grow up out of that kind of soil, like you're creating a soil. You're fertilizing, creating a soil in which you plant a seed, and that seed perhaps can take the form of some individual maturing in some dramatic way, becoming a Buddha. So I was both impressed and disturbed by this teaching. And the way I was impressed by it was I appreciated how much importance community, culture, society is, and how we learn from each other, support each other in so many ways. And it's not easy for some people to live out the values that they cherish, the values that they feel they want to live their life by. And one of the reasons why I joined a Buddhist community was because I found it hard for me to live some of my values. I wanted to find a way to do that, find support in it, and find a practice that would help me to do that. And so I've met many people who find it very hard to live some of their values, especially some of the values that come from doing meditation practice. And as their values changed, they found that, for example, they didn't want to gossip at work. But the culture at work was a lot of gossip or something. And so they find it kind of like, this is awkward now. You know, I don't want to participate in the ways that everyone else is, but I don't fit in anymore, and it feels a little difficult. And if you're the only one you know who's changing, then you could feel like you're the odd person out. You know, you're weird, or, you know, maybe something's wrong with you, and you have to change back. But if you're aware of other people, a community of people who share those values, it's a lot easier to kind of take a stand in those values or to live in those values. And also a community of people then, hopefully, who are sharing values, sharing a way of life and a practice and dedication and intention, inform new people who come in and show people what's possible. I'm reminded of the four-minute mile, that it was said that no one could run a mile in 4 minutes, and when someone finally did, then a lot of people did. And when I was new practitioner, there were all kinds of statements made, circulating around about how far people could go in their practice. For example, how concentrated people could get. Your statements, oh, people can't do jhanas anymore. That can't be done. And then people started having deep states of concentration, and then we saw from each other, wow, this can be done. And now there's lots of people who develop strong states of concentration because we see from each other what's possible. We see people's ethical purity. We see from other people that they're living in kind ways, how they talk. Oh, it's possible to talk in a way that's not always in conflict. It's possible to talk in a kind way. And so we learn. So new people come in, hopefully, are learning and growing much faster than those of us who started off. and so hopefully a society and community of practitioners creates a fertile field in which people can grow and develop. So that's what I was inspired by, that statement. What disturbed me was this emphasis on one person, that there'll be one person who grows up out of that and becomes exceptional. And it would be great. I like that. It's fine to be, for someone to become a Buddha. I'd be happy to see the next Buddha as much as anyone, probably. I think that we have a society that puts maybe sometimes excessive emphasis on the individual, and the individual becoming exceptional, standing out, and being better than everyone else. And what I've learned through practice is I think it's much healthier to understand that we're working together as a community. And it's not so much that one individual is supposed to grow and mature, but we do that for sure. The individual is very important in Buddhism. But I think it's also very important to consider ourselves as an individual as part of a community, and that the community is growing and developing. And it's not just me, but who's developing, in spite of everyone else, because of everyone else and all that. But we're growing and developing in conversation with each other. That there's an interrelatedness, interdependence, a mutuality that goes on. And there's a give and take. And so one of the things I learned from my Zen practice was emphasized there, is that sometimes the teacher is the teacher, and sometimes the teacher is the student. Sometimes you're the student, sometimes you're the teacher. It's a mutuality. We're all learning from each other. I also learned from my Zen training that to put practice at the center of a community rather than an individual, rather than focusing on the teacher or the guru or something as being that's what, central focus. Everyone, the teacher, the students, everyone together is sharing the same practice, and we have this in common. And so the idea of a community that's sharing a practice in common, and the community grows together, I think is, and hopefully, if there is a teacher, like at IMC, a teacher of a community, that those teachers are also growing and developing. And so, again, there's a mutuality. A teacher is not a fixed thing. They have a certain degree of understanding or wisdom, and they just impart that, and they just don't change. But the teacher also grows and develops. And as the teacher grows and develops, then the community grows and develops, hopefully. As a community grows and develops, a teacher grows and develops. There are ways in which there are people here in our community that I feel are more mature in some ways than I am. And so I learn from them. And they hopefully some people learn from me, because, I don't know, I don't think it works so well. Got myself in trouble, I feel. Don't know where to go now. So the idea we're in it together, and that we're growing together, and so that community is a really important part of this, and we're part of a community. But then how we participate as part of a community varies from person to person. And there's part of it depends on personality. Part of it depends on phases of where people are in their lives. Some personalities are more extroverted than others, extroverts not only are more extroverted, but extroverts tend to sometimes learn much more fully when they're in more active social contact with people. Introverts tend to sometimes learn much more if they have time to process and be alone and think about it. And so, in a community, perhaps sometimes extroverts are a little more actively engaged in what goes on in the community. Introverts are a little bit held back. And maybe that's fine to do that. And some people I know come here for years to our community and sit in the back. Not to single out any of you who are sitting in the back. I find it very important and valuable to come in a place where they're mostly anonymous. And it's really valuable to be part of that. They're part of the community, but that's the way that they feel supported. And other people who, the first day that they ever showed up here, everyone knows they're here. they just have a way of being that kind of is noticed. They're involved, they're connected. And that works for them. And it's, one of the reasons to be connected to people in a community, so not just to be anonymous, is that there is feedback that goes on back and forth. And that feedback, I think, is a very important part of the practice. There's the unspoken feedback, the fact that just be around other people and see how they carry themselves, how they are, something resonates within us, something we learn from that, we develop from that. But also there's ways in which we get active feedback. And I've gotten lots of feedback over the years from other practitioners that helped me understand myself better. I think it's probably fair to say that many people are relatively misinformed about themselves. When I say that, it wasn't meant for you to say, oh yeah, those people. Those people, it's true, I noticed that about them. To the degree to which we're misinformed, it's sometimes very helpful to get information from other people. And I've had people tell me all kinds of things about myself that I had to then think about and learn about. And sometimes someone would say something simple, and often kind, nothing. Sometimes not even a big deal, but it would linger in my mind for years as a reference point and something to reflect on and see, how does that work? What's going on here? I remember once, a very simple thing, when I was a new person at Tassajara, the Zen monastery, and I just finished relatively recently sitting Tongariyo, this intensive period of meditation practice, and I was talking to someone about it afterwards, and the person said to me, you really like to meditate, don't you? There are places you can go and you can meditate a lot more than here at Tassajara. And I kind of just brushed it off. I didn't think about it much anymore. But that lingered in my mind. Oh, I really like to meditate. And I got to look at it over the years. Now, why is that? What's going on? A part of the question was, am I attached to my meditation? Am I excessively interested in meditation? Why am I interested in meditation? What's the benefit of it? Are there places to go? Or I can meditate even more? Is that interesting? Should I do that? Should I not do it? And that little statement there that person made lingered for a long time as a kind of reference point to understand myself. I've had constructive feedback, so-called, that has been very important for me and learned that way. I've had people say things that had no reference to me at all, but then became a mirror for myself, and so I could say, oh, look at that. So there's many ways in which we can learn about ourselves, we can be informed by ourselves, by other practitioners. And we can do that by anybody at all, but sometimes a shared community, we get to know each other in deeper ways. And if the people you've chosen to be around a lot share values that are important for you, then people can give you feedback around those values. They can hold you accountable to it. But another reason to be part of a community is that it's a very important part of Buddhist practice is to support the community you're practicing in. And it's not just a one way, I'm here just to develop myself, thank you, and it's all about my practice. I think that if it's only about your practice, and you know, in a certain phase of practice, that's really important. Some people come here quite in a lot of distress, come to practice a lot of distress, and because of their deep pain, it really makes sense perhaps to really focus on themselves a lot, to really work through that and come to some kind of resolution of it. But to keep Buddhist practice to be only about yourself, I think limits how fully the Buddhist practice can mature and develop in us. It's not like there's a big should, that you should practice for others or support other people, but I think there's a limit in how far your own practice can go if it's concerned only with oneself. There's something very powerful and significant that happens in the heart, in the mind, when we feel that what we're doing is supporting other people or helping other people. And one of the significant places to support and help is to support, take care of the place that you're practicing in, your own practice place. And this is institutionalized in a sense at IMC because it's so important, because by not having any paid positions here, we're all volunteers. So it's only the people who practice here who take care of this place. And if the people who practice here didn't take care of it, we wouldn't have this place. So it doesn't mean that everyone has to share and take care of it, but it means that it's such an integral part of who we are that it's obvious that if people who practice here don't take care of it, it's not going to happen. And so it's a place to be of service. It's a place to extend. Or experiment with being of service, to be of service with a community of people, like-minded people, to be of service in a community where hopefully it's okay to be in conflict. And this, I think, is one of the important aspects, I hope, of a Buddhist community, Buddhist Sangha, that a Buddhist Sangha is a place where it's safe to be in conflict. Because I don't know of any community where there's not going to be conflict. I think, you know, many people have these idealistic ideas of Buddhist communities. Many people I know, kind of in residential Buddhist communities I've been in, people from outside will say, oh, wow, you know, this is so ideal there. These people, they're living this beatific meditation life, and they must be, you know, on the verge of Buddhahood, all of them. And then they go and live in the community, and they're a little bit surprised. But they shouldn't be, because community are, you know, people. Communities are difficult. But I think, so we don't look for a Buddhist community to be ideally harmonious. What I hope we look for in a Buddhist community is a willingness to enter into a wise, compassionate approach for working with a conflict. We look for a community where, if there is conflict and differences, that no one is turned away. There's always a place here. No one feels uncomfortable coming. Everyone's invited. And so it becomes a place where people can experiment with being in conflict and talk to each other about, look, I'm in conflict with you. Can we talk about it? No. Well, that's interesting. Now I have to practice with that. And what does it mean for me to show up now where the person wasn't willing? And they get to explore that. Or they say, yes, let's talk about it. And I've had tremendously significant conversations with other people in my Buddhist communities, and even here at IMC, with people that I've been in conflict with. And so are we willing to hang in there? So that's one of the values I think is very important in the community, is that we're here to hang in together. And so it's a place to practice around something that's very difficult to practice with, which is conflict. So it's a place to learn about ourselves, it's a place to be of service, it's the place to develop our practice and many different forms of practice, including that of learning about conflict, which I think is really a key place of practice. And it's also a place to, in a very healthy, wonderful way, to forget about oneself. Because as long as we have this self and other dichotomy, it's me and my practice, it's them over there, there's me and the community, there's an unnecessary divide, unnecessary activity of the mind that's really not so helpful in the big picture. Sooner or later, I think it's helpful to actually feel that we're all in it together. And that there, and we're not just practicing for ourselves, we're practicing for all beings, including ourselves. And I think that practice, without that sense, I don't think practice, at some point, sooner or later, a person simply won't keep practicing. Some people that's sooner, some people it's later, there's no idea of when it should be. But unless we have some sense that we're all in it together, we're practicing for all beings, and that even the sense of all beings disappears, I don't think we have a sense of practice continuing and developing. So one of the interesting areas of developing and being part of a Buddhist community is to explore being of service, being connected, being in community, being involved, and beginning to soften or question the very notions of what it means to be an individual, what it means to be a community, what it means to be connected, what it means not to be connected. All are valuable ideas, all are valuable activities in the mind or things going on. But to begin understanding how all this works and begin questioning it is very, very important, because a lot of the suffering human beings have come around their idea of self, their idea of community, their idea of others, the comparisons that go on, and their ideas of everyone should be connected. Ideas of interdependence can be as much source of suffering as ideas of being independent. All these ideas, all these ways in which people are in community, or even not being in community, are all things to explore, and cultivate, and develop so that the mind, the heart, can find its way through the layers and layers and layers of concepts, ideas, conditioning that exists so that the heart can be set free. And with the heart free, then hopefully we find ourselves with a heart that is motivated by compassion and love, and that becomes something that flows out to us and benefits our society. So I hope this has given you something to think about, and I encourage you to reflect a little bit about community, your understanding of community, relationship community has in your practice, in your life right now, and how maybe over the years your relationship to community has shifted and changed, and how it might shift and change again, how it belongs to phases in a person's life. In classical Buddhism, a Buddhist practitioner would alternate between phases that are somewhat solitary, more individualistic, kind of focusing on one's own practice, versus phases of time that's much more communal. And part of, you know, and you go back and forth. And that back and forth, I think, is really a wonderful thing. And in a sense, we do that in our tradition by going on retreats. And we go on retreats, which are much, in a sense, much more about our own practice. And then there's a phase where we're much more in society, in the world, with our family and neighbors and work and maybe your Buddhist community, that's much more collective focused. So we go back and forth. So where are you in all this, and where are you in the phase? And if this is at all interesting for you, this topic, for reflection, then I would add one more request or suggestion, is that during this week, or sometime in the next little while, you find someone that you can talk to about this very topic. So you don't just keep it to yourself, but you actually hear yourself talk about it to someone else, and you hear, get some feedback and hear their ideas as well, the importance of community. So in a few minutes, at 11 o'clock, in 25 minutes, we're going to have our community meeting. And we're going to end a little bit early, partly to set up and all that, because we have to set up the outer room and stuff. We have to have enough time for that. But it would be great, given the theme of today, that if, as we break now, that you would turn to someone near you hopefully someone you don't know so well, and just say hello, introduce yourself. You do that, willing? Thank you.